The RBTU in New South Wales have been working on the EBA for quite a long time and have done some rolling actions, but nothing as severe as a full-on strike, correct?
Correct, and we still haven't run a strike, to be honest. It's been an incredible week, and certainly the first time in my experience of working for a trade union that workers have been accused of striking when they actually turned up for work.
So tell us about the day. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, so essentially the union notified Sydney Trains of planned industrial actions on the 9th of February, and they were low-level industrial actions that we believe wouldn't have a material impact on services. But then the New South Wales government dragged the RTBU into the Fair Work Commission late last week in an attempt to stop workers from taking those actions. And after failing to get the outcome that it wanted from the commission, Sydney Trains proceeded late at night on Sunday night into the early hours of Monday morning to shut down its entire network. So our members turned up to work on Monday and they weren't allowed to do anything. And while they were stuck in their middle rooms, the New South Wales Minister for Transport, David Elliott, and the Prime Minister both went on commercial radio in Sydney to falsely tell the public that Sydney Trains weren't running because workers were on strike. And in fact, Minister Elliott then went as far as to saying that the actions of workers amounted to terrorist-like activity. And this perception that the shutdown was caused by workers was reinforced by notices that were stuck up at train stations that repeated the lie that the shutdown was caused by industrial action, when in reality, the shutdown was a decision that was made deliberately by the state government itself.
My God, that's so incredibly underhanded, isn't it?
Like I said, I've never seen something like this in 13 years of working in the trade union movement. Normally, when unions go on strike, we own it. It's a legitimate industrial tactic. But in our industry, we make sure that we give passengers advance notice when we're taking that sort of action because we know that industrial action on the public transport network has consequences for commuters and for the public, and we need to give them time to make alternative arrangements. So this happened at very short notice. Commuters had no warning whatsoever, and they were understandably angry about it, and they took out that anger, unfortunately, on our members.
So can you go back to the Fair Work Commission and tell us what was actually at dispute? Why did they take you to the Fair Work Commission?
So the actions that we had filed included a ban on altered working, which is essentially a form of work to rule, whereby workers stick to what they are rostered to do and don't take on extra unrostered work during the day. And as I said, our view was that this would have caused minimal disruption to services, especially given that the employer had 2 weeks' notice to ensure that enough staff were rostered on to deliver the timetable as planned. But we subsequently have found out that the Transport for New South Wales had privately drawn up plans to shut down the network on the basis that it believed those industrial actions would represent a safety risk. It's worth noting that the claim about a safety risk was never mentioned to the RTBU in the 2 weeks between us notifying the action and the Fair Work hearing, and we didn't get an opportunity to sit down with them and talk about their concerns and work out any resolution because our union certainly takes rail safety incredibly seriously. It's always our top priority, and we would never deliberately take an industrial action that would put safety at risk.
In fact, the RBTU during the COVID situation was actually on the front foot in regards to safety, while Transport New South Wales was a little bit behind, I'd have to say.
Certainly, in regards to our members on the bus network in particular, I think our buses were at the forefront of arguing for the need for passengers to be wearing masks. And in this dispute as well, a core part of our claim in the industrial dispute behind this week's shutdown, if you like, is the fact that we want to make sure that hygiene and cleanliness is maintained on the rail network. I think the COVID crisis has really put a spotlight on the importance of maintaining cleanliness and hygiene on public transport. And we want to make sure that those operations are kept in-house in Sydney Trains and that hygiene and cleanliness is not sacrificed for cost-cutting purposes. So you're right, safety is critical to not only our industrial claims, but what we do to make sure that workers and public transport passengers are kept safe. And we find the whole argument that's been put forward this week that our actions would have constituted a safety risk, frankly, to be quite insulting.
The other thing is, can you give us some idea about what are the sticking points in regards to the EBA? Why is it so difficult for New South Wales Transport to actually come up with a working plan?
The EBA negotiations should have been dragging on for a long time, and the agreement expired in the middle of last year. The reason I think that it's become so complicated is we've got to the point in New South Wales where we're not just arguing over pay, we're really fighting for the future of passenger rail services in New South Wales. And among the sticking points in the negotiations, privatisation. We want a commitment that no train services or lines will be lost in the event of privatisation. Safety, we want to guarantee that any changes to services will leave those services as safe or safer. And hygiene, we want a commitment to maintain the existing level of hygiene using good full-time jobs. So we're really going for our claims are not just about workers' conditions. Our claims are about the future of the network and ensuring that the people of New South Wales are served by a safe, reliable, and publicly owned public transport system that operates in their interest.
What happened on the day? I mean, people turned up to work, but and you said they weren't able to work. What did they hire security guards?
No, they would. Our members were just told basically to sit around in meal rooms and wait for further advice. So we had thousands of workers idle and getting paid, which was extraordinary. And watching the news and seeing themselves being maligned by politicians, and listening to people talk about how they were on strike. It was an extraordinary situation, and very frustrating for our members because, as a if they were on strike, they would have been out the front with placards. They would have been on picket lines and demonstrating and making their voices heard. But instead, they were, but they actually felt as if they'd been pushed aside and hidden while politicians were lying about what was going on and misrepresenting them. And I think some of that frustration came out when our members took it upon themselves to set the record straight. And we held a press conference that morning at Central Station where our branch secretary, Alex Classens, got up and forcefully made the point that workers weren't on strike. And he was surrounded by workers in their work gear, in their uniforms, and they are quite prepared to stand up in front of the cameras and to say the truth and say that what politicians were saying about them was simply wrong.
So who told them to go to the meal rooms? So is there a, what sort of structure is there?
It was instruction from Sydney Trains bosses through their management. Which is through the management structure that came down to our rank and file members and workers. They turned up. But it wasn't a case of the train stations and depots being boarded up or locked up. It was simply a management directive that no services were to run. So hence that was why they were actually on site. They were sitting around in the mill ridge, and as I said, they were still getting paid.
So this is actually a publicity stunt, isn't it? This is to undermine the general public's support for the workers on the railways and the buses.
And I think it's really hard to work out what was going on. And it's hard to see any sort of sensible strategy from the government as to what this was about. I mean, I'm not sure if the people running Sydney Trains are just monstrously incompetent and couldn't be trusted running a game of Connect Four, let alone a complicated urban rail system, or if there is something more sinister and pre-planned behind it all. And if it really was a planned industrial and political strategy, I'd have to say that it has backfired on the state government. We've already learned this week that transport agencies have actually been preparing for a shutdown for 2 weeks. So that does indicate that there was a degree of planning behind this. And in fact, they had prepared a detailed brief of evidence about the impact of an extended shutdown to present to the Fair Work Commission. So it is implausible to think that the minister and his office did not have any idea that a shutdown was on the table. But at the end of the day, I think we all want answers as to what actually happened and why it happened. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of scrutiny on the state government and the transport agencies over the coming weeks about this.
So where does it leave you guys now? What's happening now?
Well, we're back negotiating again. And ironically, the system should be back up and running on Monday to the timetable that was planned. And the industrial actions that we were intending to take are still on the table. So far from the safety risk that was being proclaimed this Monday, next Monday the same industrial actions will be in place and the system will be operating as per normal, which casts, I would say, some doubt on the claims of safety Armageddon that the government were putting forward earlier this week. So in that regard, we're glad that rail services will be back up and running. We're glad that our members will be back at work. But now we get back into the hard slog of negotiating again. And out of this week, the Transport Minister has actually made commitments that he will negotiate with us on the issues that we've raised. And we're hopeful that out of all of this, we've actually got over something of a hill, and that now we can get down and get some proper outcomes out of the EBA process, and that the government will take our claim seriously, and hopefully we'll be in a position to go back to our members relatively soon with an agreement that they will consider. But at this stage, that's still a hope. We still have a lot of work to do, and we're back at the negotiating table.
Have there been calls for the Transport Minister to resign?
Yes, there have. They certainly have. And he has some pretty serious questions to answer. During the week, he claimed that he had no say in the decision to shut down the network. He said that the decision was made purely by transport bureaucrats and that they made it in the middle of the night while he was asleep.
Oh, how shocking.
So there's been a real failure in ministerial responsibility and accountability, and that's not how the Westminster system is meant to work. When it comes to such a significant decision about how metropolitan city the size of Sydney operates and the importance of its public transport network, for a minister to say, well, I had no say in it because it's purely an operational matter, is just outrageous. And the minister needs to understand that that's his job. It's his job to make these decisions. But it's actually hard to reconcile what's gone on and his insistence that he had no say in it. I think there will be a lot of scrutiny over the next few weeks to see if his office was aware of what was going on and how much of a role they played in the preparation for what actually occurred late on Sunday night and early on Monday morning.
It is very interesting. We've got a prime minister who does this on a regular basis, and we've had things like the sale of land at exorbitant prices under Fletcher, who then said that it was all the bureaucrats' fault. He had nothing to do with it. I mean, this seems to be, and now this kind of thing coming out of the Liberals in New South Wales seems to be a theme, really.
And we shouldn't forget the role that the Prime Minister played in this. He was very quickly onto commercial radio in Sydney to reinforce the point that had been made by David Elliott that the rail shutdown was caused by a strike by workers. He then, several hours later, made the point again, even more forcefully, at a media doorstop in Tasmania. And he even went as far as linking the fake strike to you can expect to see more of this under a Labor government to try and turn it into a political attack. And that in itself makes us suspicious that there was a degree of political planning behind what happened, and that it may well have been orchestrated as an attempt to smear workers and to smear unions and to smear the Labor Party.
And also notice he was in a doorstop in Tasmania, conveniently out of New South Wales.
Conveniently out of New South Wales. Since then, I should note that a lot of our members, because the shutdown was implemented so quickly and because communities didn't have a chance to make any preparations, there was a lot of community anger over what had happened, and that anger was directed at our members. We've had instances of members being abused, of being racially abused, of being physically assaulted in at least one opportunity. And I can tell you that in our union office, we've had many threatening and abusive messages and phone calls, including death threats. So the language that was used by the New South Wales Minister, the New South Wales Premier, and by the Prime Minister was highly inflammatory, and it had real world consequences for our members. And we have demanded that those politicians apologise for the language they use and the consequences that their words had for our members. We have heard nothing back from the Prime Minister. He has completely ignored the issue, and he's burying his head in the sand and basically hoping that the smear sticks. It's extremely disappointing, but we are getting on with the job, doing our best to represent our members. And fighting the good fight, and we'll continue to apply pressure to the state government and to the federal government, not only to deliver a fair and reasonable enterprise agreement for our members, but to ensure that public transport services for the people of New South Wales and all the other states around Australia where we represent public transport workers, we want to ensure that those services deliver what communities need. And at the same time, we want to see politicians who are actually prepared to tell the truth. And we didn't see that this week. It must be a mistake here because, like I said, at first, it genuinely looked like a conspiracy and a setup. And I thought, no, that can't be right. I must be missing something because not even these guys would stoop so low. I'm missing something here. It wasn't until the end of Monday, and I was sort of watching it all play out in the news, but that actually happened. This was real. You don't, seeing them spring out of the blocks and so quickly go to that sort of outrageous rhetoric about terrorists and strikes and holding the city for ransom. And then for the truth to come out that it wasn't a strike at all, it was a lockout. It's even with Qantas, I mean, at least with Qantas, but they owned it. They weren't, they didn't lie about the fact they were locking out their workers. They're quite, open about it. It was an industrial strategy. So how this week's been really strange.
Thanks very much for talking to me, Stuart.